From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, abortion access and reproductive care in America, 1 year after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned 50 years of precedent. 1 year ago this month, a majority on the High Court struck down the landmark ruling known as Roe versus Wade in what is known as the Dobbs decision, referring to the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. This decision, in effect, took away a woman's right to choose whether or not to carry her pregnancy to term. As the Center for American Progress reports, during the past years, the pace of new legislation on abortion has been swift. They report that at least 22 million women of reproductive age found themselves living in states where abortion was unavailable or severely restricted. At least 14 states now have near total abortion bans during any point in pregnancy, and 6 states have implemented abortion bans with other limits from 6 to 20 weeks after a person's last menstrual period. Our guest on this edition of the program is Sabrina Talukder. She is the director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress, and that's a liberal think tank here in Washington. Previously, Sabrina was the federal policy director at the Anti-Trafficking Initiative at Loyola Marymount University's Law School. There, she focused on trafficking prevention policies through the lens of climate equity, immigration reform, abortion access, and racial justice. Talukder also worked at the Legal Aid Society in New York City for 6 years, where she started as an Equal Justice Works Fellow. We will talk with Sabrina about the trends in state abortion laws that reveal severe restrictions on the procedure, as well as a shrinking of other related reproductive services and how marginalized women are most adversely affected. Sabrina Talukder joins us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Sabrina, 1 year on after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, our audience is familiar because we have talked about this issue over the past year. A big general question to sort of kick off our conversation. What is, in your view, Sabrina, the overall fallout from overturning Roe v. Wade in America? What does abortion access look like in the United States without this federal precedent?
Thank you so much for having me again. And I would say that the overturning of Roe v. Wade is truly a stain on our country's history and an affront to basic values of freedom and dignity. What the Supreme Court did in the Dobbs decision is deny the constitutional right to abortion, and it continues to threaten the ability of people to make private personal decisions that shape their futures. And what we're seeing on a local, state, and federal level is an enforcement of the Dobbs decision in truly horrific ways that impact maternal health, pregnancy care, and as always, just exacerbate underlying conditions for marginalized groups.
Sabrina, let's just step back and look at what Roe did for women over the past 50 years. Talk about the decision itself and the kinds of choices that were available and some restrictions as well.
Yes. So in terms of what Roe versus Wade did is that it constructed the right to abortion as a personal privacy right, that a woman or a pregnant person has the ability to make a decision about whether or not they choose to have an abortion as their own personal right, a decision that they can make about their own body. However, what the Dobbs decision did is eliminate that right to privacy, the constitutional protection that any person in the United States, regardless of their political affiliation or zip code, they had that entitlement under the U.S. Constitution. And what we've seen now over the past year is just how this has chipped away at all different kinds of healthcare in the United States. And in terms of the restrictions that existed before, one really important thing that we have to talk about is the Hyde Amendment. So the Hyde Amendment is a congressional appropriations rider that prohibited federal funds from being used to pay for abortion care. And again, it happened on the federal level. And so that meant that millions of women that were enrolled in Medicaid did not receive coverage for their abortions. And many are forced and were forced to continue their pregnancies just because they couldn't afford to pay for an abortion. And what I'd really like for our listeners to know that in a pre-Dobbs world, it was still really difficult for people to get abortions. People who were uninsured or underinsured, had lower employment rates, or were living long distance from health centers. These groups that were already marginalized had a really difficult time getting an abortion. However, in a post-Dobbs world, those underlying inequalities have just been exacerbated. And people that desperately need just pregnancy care, maternal health care, are not able to seek the health care that they are entitled to on a state and federal level. And all of this is exacerbated by the plight of medical providers and medical professionals, because they are just trapped in this legal quandary of, even if their patient desperately needs an abortion for whatever medical reason, you know, a decision that should happen between a medical professional and their patient, their hands are really tied by these really conflicting and confusing languages in state exceptions where there are state bans around abortion care. And what we've seen in the past year is just a slew of criminal and civil cases that have both tried to clarify these issues to expand and protect abortion care, but also cases that punish and criminalize abortion care.
This criminalization of abortion care and the risks posed to providers of abortion care or other reproductive services is really chilling. So this I'd like to get into in a minute, but once again, going back to abortion as a right of a woman to choose, it's really extraordinary. On the other hand, we are seeing abortion. It is part of the so-called culture wars. It's become a very partisan issue, with Republicans and conservatives largely leaning anti-abortion and Democrats and progressives being more pro-choice. How do you think, Sabrina, has the politicization of abortion contributed to the new restrictive abortion laws emanating from state legislatures?
Well, I would say first and foremost that regardless of what any political party purports to say about abortion, the overwhelming majority of Americans support the legal right to abortion. And there is no state in the country where banning abortion is popular. We've seen over the past year across partisan lines that voters have come out time and again in state after state to rise up against abortion bans in whatever form they may take to support reproductive freedom. And we've also seen that ignoring the will of the voters is a huge political liability. However, in terms of politicization and abortion access serving as a lightning rod, it has really brought up just how politicized our judiciary has become. We've seen it in one of the most controversial cases, which is Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus the Federal Drug Administration, also known as the FDA, where far-right extremist groups have been able to commandeer the judiciary in order to do things that are unprecedented, like question the safety and efficacy of drugs that have been on the market and approved by the FDA for over two decades. Just like we saw in the Supreme Court's very radical decision in overturning 50 years of precedent with the Dobbs decision, we've seen that now on the appellate level, meaning on a lower federal level throughout the country. And that, to me, is really what this lightning rod shows, is, again, first, that any party who makes a move that is anti-abortion, that restricts access to healthcare, restricts access to reproductive freedom, is really going against their constituents, that Americans are voting in favor of protecting abortion. And second, that our judiciary system is politicized and abortion is one frame to see that.
And now let's look at the concrete impact of the Dobbs decision, where decisions over abortion access now have been remanded to the 50 states. And as we said in the introduction, 14 states have total abortion bans. So let's look at those states. Sabrina, where are they located? Who are the women and families that are adversely affected by these bans and restrictions? I'm assuming, and it looks like the data show, that these are mostly red states, Republican-leaning states that are enacting these restrictive laws. I'd like you to give us a picture of what we're looking at geographically and sociologically.
Thank you. And that's a great question. So just to paint an image of what a map of the United States looks like and states that can and can't access abortion. Currently, there are 14 states that have near total abortion bans during any point in pregnancy. And those states are Alabama, Arkansas, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. And currently, there are other states that have similar abortion bans, but those have been temporarily blocked by the courts. And those include states that aren't necessarily in what we think of as the American South, like Arizona. And so what we have is a really piecemeal attempt in both expanding and restricting abortion access. And what this means is that we've seen a surge of legislative framework on the state level that both prohibits and protects abortion. And if you're just a normal everyday American, it's extremely confusing to know what exactly you are legally entitled to in your state for things beyond abortion care. Emergency care in the form of abortion is now a huge question mark. For example, in the first ever case regarding EMTALA, which is federal protection for emergency health care, the Biden administration said that abortion care is covered under this federal statute called EMTALA. And in a really heartbreaking case filed by the National Women's Law Center, there was an EMTALA claim where a woman who was pregnant was refused care by multiple hospitals in two states because her emergency care required an abortion. And she went to two different states and she was rejected each time. That is what we are seeing on an individual level, is that people who are in dire need of health care are being denied out of the fear that this patchwork, confusing state laws have created in the wake of the Dobbs decision. And as always, the folks that are most impacted by these cases are marginalized groups. Again, people that are more likely to be uninsured or underinsured, people who are facing lower employment, people who live long distances from health centers. And I would really stress that the confusion of these bans is really at the heart of how an individual is impacted. Right now, nearly 47%, nearly half of the women in states with abortion bans don't know if mifepristone is legal in their state. And mifepristone is the first drug taken in a two-step regimen to induce an abortion. And it's just heartbreaking to imagine being in need of such urgent care and being in fear of even approaching your pediatrician, your emergency care doctor, anyone for help, because the fear is so strong. And the same thing can be said for providers. We've seen that Dobbs has been enforced on a state level through criminal penalties, bounty hunter provisions, and so much more. And the fear is so strong because physicians stand to lose their medical licenses in addition to severe jail time, really atrocious fees. And we've seen legal cases like that. For example, in the case of Dr. Caitlin Bernard in Indiana, an attorney general targeted her for speaking to the press about a patient that she had that was a 10-year-old victim of a rape that left her home state of Ohio to travel to Indiana for an abortion. And the attorney general targeted the doctor for it and filed an administrative complaint citing horrific things, that she was like an unfit doctor. And thankfully, she did not lose her medical license, but she was reprimanded. She did have to pay a fee. And it sends a chilling message to physicians all over the country about how one of the highest prosecutorial powers in a state can target a physician for just speaking to the press about the injustices that their patients face. And so I hope for our listeners, both in the United States and abroad, it's important to stand in solidarity with just patients who are seeking care that they vitally need at one of the most vulnerable points in their life.
We'll have more in just a moment. You are listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our special guest is Sabrina Talukder. She's director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. That's based here in Washington. We are marking the anniversary of the Supreme Court's decision to remove the federal right to abortion access in the United States by striking down Roe versus Wade. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener and Facebook fan, Amna Bhatti from Karachi, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Sabrina Tolukder. She's director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. And Sabrina, you mentioned what we call medical abortions, mifepristone, which is a very effective form of medication abortion. Statistics show that more than half of abortions in America are through medication abortion. So this is an important topic for us to discuss because, as we have said, abortion now is inaccessible in 14 states. It's very restricted in many others. And we're seeing Republican lawmakers and conservative judges pushing for new laws to criminalize, as you have just said, criminalize abortion. And the latest was an attempt by a Texas federal judge to block access to this drug, mifepristone. That's a safe and effective form of medication abortion. It was approved by our FDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, for more than 20 years. So, Sabrina, how dangerous is this moment in your view right now? And what is the status of mifepristone?
Right now, we're in an extremely dangerous moment because the case regarding mifepristone, which is Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus the Food and Drug Administration, highlights that our judiciary has been commandeered by far-right activists to essentially circumvent the way that our legal system works to get a political outcome. And this case should never have been brought to court in the first place because it's unprecedented for a judge to even consider the safety and efficacy of any drug in the United States that has already been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And yet, this case has come specifically before a judge that is known for their personal views on abortion, and it has gone extremely far. And currently, the case is being guided by an order from the Supreme Court, which says that the status of mifepristone must stay the same while this case is ongoing. And, you know, what I hope that people take away from this case is that whatever the final word is when it comes to the approval of mifepristone in the United States, these decisions have laid bare the politicization of our courts that must be addressed moving forward, and that the American people deserve a fair and just legal system, not one that is made up of politicians hiding in robes. And no matter what your zip code is, no matter what party that you vote for, you want to open your medicine cabinet at night knowing that someone with scientific expertise with a medical background decided that that drug was safe for you to take. You don't want a judge who has no training, who is a judge that's there to answer legal questions to decide what is safe for you to take.
Well, Sabrina, you certainly have laid bare the politicization of the issue. And even by the judiciary here in the United States, just the fact that polling shows that a majority of Americans are in favor of protecting a woman's right to legalized abortion at the federal level, and the fact that we have a Supreme Court that has rolled back that right, 50 years of that particular right, that is dissonant, right? It seems to be contradictory.
Absolutely. And right now, public opinion on the integrity and just public trust at the Supreme Court is at an all-time low. And if the court hopes to regain a shred of its reputation after such a cruel and just ungrounded decision, it should ensure that the FDA's expert judgment is allowed to stay intact and overturn the lower court's decisions if the case does go back up to the Supreme Court.
And then that also raises another question. The extent to which perhaps the very legitimacy of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is being undermined by this seemingly spurious, capricious decision to basically reject the FDA on the part of this particular judge and question the efficacy of mifepristone when for 20 years the FDA said it's fine. Well, then what other judge might question another medication for something else?
Absolutely, Carol. You've really hit the nail on the head. Essentially, whatever the outcome of this case will serve as an open invitation to political actors to question any drug that they want. That could be vaccines, that could be Tylenol, it can be Viagra, whatever drug you hold near and dear to your heart can be threatened. And the reality is that we want all Americans and everyone in the world wants to be able to not just have access to medicine, but to know that that medicine has been delivered through an independent thought process, that the drugs that we take on a regular basis, the medicine that we take, should not have been decided through politics. It should be decided through science and medical determinations around safety. And most importantly, by an agency or an entity that is insulated from politics, like the Food and Drug Administration.
Indeed. Well, I want to go back to another question because I want to talk about interstate lines. And that is that going to be under attack? That is, those women who live in states where access to abortion services are severely restricted or even banned, are they currently allowed to go to another state, or is that also going to be under attack? Will they be penalized for doing that?
That's a great question, and I'd love to provide some context for it. So in 2022, the Guttmacher Institute estimated that there will be a significant increase in travel for abortions. And what we've seen in the past year is that nearly 1 in 10 people seeking abortion care traveled outside their home state to access abortion. And that's been verified on a state level. In Colorado, we've seen that 28% of abortion care was for out-of-state patients. And in the first 4 months of Texas's bill known as SB 8, Planned Parenthood health centers in surrounding states saw an 800% increase in abortion patients. And one way in which both providers and patients have been protected going out of state and seeking care, and for providers providing care to out-of-state patients, is through SHIELD laws. SHIELD laws either happen through executive order or the legislative process on a state level, and it prohibits abortion providers and patients from being prosecuted by states that criminalize abortion. And again, because there's so much fear and confusion around exceptions to abortion care, the extreme jail time, fines, penalties, loss of medical license, etc., there's so much fear around this that SHIELD laws are incredibly important in sending a message to patients and providers that abortion care as healthcare is welcome here and you are welcome here. And there's also been a lot of attempts on the state level to expand access to medication abortion. For example, New York has taken an extra step to protect providers. And there's a state law that now allows providers to provide telemedicine abortion services to out-of-state patients. All of this is extremely important in reiterating that even though the Dobbs decision stripped the American public of their right to an abortion, their constitutional protection via the right to privacy, that abortions are still going to happen, that people are going to need this really important form of pregnancy care and health care no matter what. And we need more states to have SHIELD laws, more states to expand access to medication abortion that allows people to have an abortion with the safety and comfort of their own homes, to look at other medical professionals like doulas and midwives that can help people go through this process in a manner that is culturally competent and emotionally supportive and trauma-informed. And as much as we have seen this horrific increase in state restrictions, we've also seen states fight back.
Well, that's comforting to know that there are so-called sanctuary states that women can travel to and get the care of which they're deprived in their own home states. Speaking of how this can be reversed, you spoke a bit about, you know, how the majority of Americans are in favor of the constitutional right to an abortion, and how this is health care, this is reproductive care, this is family health care. What do we do now? It seems to me that this is now a question for the voters and passing a law in Congress. So I'm familiar with something called the Women's Health Protection Act of 2023, and I assume you're aware of this legislation as well, which is meant to counter local attempts at restricting a woman's right to choose.
Yes.
So if you could just briefly talk about this comprehensive legislation, which does safeguard abortion rights and personal decision-making with regard to abortion, what is the likelihood of its passage into law?
So we unfortunately can't make predictions as much as we would want on these really important pieces of legislation. And, you know, WIPA is an incredibly comprehensive set of bills that would make such a difference in the lives of women seeking abortion care. But the reality is that right now, with the Congress that we have, that for the most immediate effect, as much as we support WIPA, that there are other solutions as well to this issue. But we, of course, really hope that WIPA passes.
Well, exactly. And that leads me to my next question. I guess to really comprehensively address this issue, to reinstate a constitutional right that was taken away by the Supreme Court, it seems to me that Americans are going to have to vote a certain way, vote for those candidates who will vote for this type of legislation, who will pass a law, a federal law. Is that the way we have to go eventually in order to address this question once and for all, rather than in a piecemeal fashion, which is still better than nothing? Okay, some states, you know, are welcoming of women who live in restrictive states and all of this type of, you know, providing of medication abortion to women, either through telemedicine or through mifepristone, which is a very effective form of medication abortion. Isn't that really what needs to happen, Sabrina?
I think that there are many ways to ensure, even without the constitutional protections of Roe, that every woman in America can access abortion care in a meaningful way. And I would really stress that there are five ways to do this. The first is, as you said, is ballot initiatives. The second is codified statutory protections on a state level. The third is shield laws, as we discussed. Fourth is expanding access to medication abortion. And the fifth is just making abortions more affordable. And to speak to what you're saying on ballot initiatives, a strong majority, 64% of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in most or all cases. And when it was put on the ballot in Kansas and Kentucky, we saw voters reject anti-abortion amendments. And I hope that, you know, Republicans listening in will remember that candidates who are supportive of abortion rights are proudly sharing their views and values with voters. And those values are winning in red, blue, and purple states. And we've seen that most clearly in the state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin, where the risk of losing abortion access clearly motivated voters across the country in last year's midterm elections. But really, the right to abortion was at stake in the state's vital Supreme Court election. Wisconsin voters, particularly young people, made a powerful statement by turning out at historic levels to reject the state's abortion ban and politically motivated attacks on abortion. And progressives, we saw, had success in persuading voters, those in suburbs, but even in some rural areas, to back a judge that was in line with the abortion views of voters. And it's an unfortunate world where we have to put reproductive health care on the ballot, but we've seen the incredible strength of American voters in coming out and voting in favor of those rights. We've also seen the success with states that have codified these statutory protections. For example, in Colorado, New Jersey, and Minnesota, they've all passed laws with affirmative language to protect reproductive rights, including abortion access. New Jersey, notably, their bill covers contraception, including emergency contraception, access to public benefits, the choice to terminate a pregnancy, and a choice to carry a pregnancy to full term. And one really important thing that we have to discuss are our state governors that have signed executive orders to protect and support abortion access. For example, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer repealed the state's 1931 abortion ban. And I will say that we've talked about medication abortion, but even before the protection of Roe, abortion and healthcare is really difficult to access in the United States. And what we've seen in a post-Roe world is attempts to make abortions more affordable. For example, in 2022, after Dobbs, we saw five states enact legislation to make abortion more affordable through both private health insurance plans and state Medicaid coverage. And in 2023, we saw nine states introduce legislation to expand coverage for abortion under Medicaid. And on top of that, there were 18 states that introduced legislation to expand coverage under private health plans. So I hope the main takeaway from what has worked 1 year after Roe is that even though piecemeal protections exist, we can have a multifaceted strategy in expanding and protecting abortion access.
Sabrina Talukder is the director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. Sabrina, thank you so much for your time and terrific insights about abortion access or lack thereof in America since the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.